with a quote, and it should be up on the screen here, a quote from Armand Nicoli, and it says, "We may ignore, but we cannot evade the presence of God. The world is crowded with him. He walks everywhere incognito, and the incognito is not always easy to penetrate. The real labor is to remember to attend." I kind of like that quote because sometimes, you know, just trying to stay in tune with where God is at work in your life or if his presence is near takes some real effort. And so we're trying to explore what does it mean to be in the presence of God, because most of us long to be close to God. We long for God's presence to invade our lives in deep and profound ways. But there's struggles with that. And the first verse I have on the screen, and it'll also be on your outline, I'll be jumping around a bit. The psalmist says this. He says, "Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourselves in times of trouble?" The psalmist is saying, where are you? I don't see you. I don't feel you. Your presence is distance from me. And I'm sure all of you, to some degree, can relate to that. There are times when God's presence feels far away. And I've had those periods of time in my life, too. You know, when you say, where are you, God? I don't sense you. I don't feel you right now. I feel like you're far, far away. And yet we also read this. We look in Genesis here. This is the story of Jacob. And Jacob is in a rough time in his life, and he's run away from home. And he's got another brother that wants to kill him, and it's a mess. And he fell asleep, and he had this dream of the stairway to heaven kind of dream here. And he wakes up, and he says this, and I read it to you. "Jacob woke up from his sleep, and he said, 'God is in this place.'" He had this incredible dream. "Truly, and I didn't even know it." He was terrified. He whispered in awe, "Incredible, wonderful, holy. This is the house of God, the gate of heaven." And maybe you can relate to that too, where suddenly you experience God's presence. You go from being unaware to aware, maybe even deeply aware. And I've heard people share stories of suddenly an overwhelming sense of God's presence in their lives. And it does incredible things to them in that particular moment. So maybe you feel some of both. There's times where God's felt a million miles away. There's times where he's felt intimately close. And then there's everything in between. Paul, in the New Testament, at one time comes to a place called Mars Hill. And there's all these Greek philosophers there and religious leaders of their day. And they have all these statues and edifices up for the various gods. And Paul wants to talk to them about this unknown God that's his God. And he says this about God, and I'd like to read it to you. Acts 17. Paul says this, "The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands." That ought to be a little bit striking right off, because the Jews built a temple too, and there was often a sense of God's, you know, living there. And so Paul's saying something rather profound here. "He is not served by human hands as if he needed anything." You know, there's a lot of sense in that time. You had to please the gods, and if you didn't please those gods, bad stuff would happen. You please the gods, good stuff happened. "Rather, he himself gave everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations so that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their hands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he's not far from any one of us." He starts with God made everything. And then this, "and he never left it. He was active and involved in all of it the whole time." Unlike the gods in the Greek mythology and the Roman mythology, where those gods were distant because they were elsewhere. They were where the gods would be. And Paul's saying, no, our God is always here. He's closer than you think. All you have to do is reach out. And if we look at the next slide, We started with this painting last week. Dave spoke on it too, where we have this picture. There's God just trying to reach, trying to connect. There's Adam trying to connect, and there's man. And you see there this sort of limp attempt. Sort of, you know, it's like God's trying real hard and man's not really wholeheartedly into this. And Paul's words there, you know, God's so close, if we just reach out, if we just reach out, he's that close, he's straining, and we're kind of, come on, reach out. That's what Paul's saying to these guys too. Adam doesn't seem to want to do a whole lot of straining, but God sure does. God longs to connect to us. And that's a profound thing to keep in mind. And yet, if I'm honest, and sometimes I am, I wish God would show himself more plainly. Don't you? Maybe part the Fraser River during rush hour so I can drive through on dry ground. Something small, something inconsequential. But, you know, those kind of biblical stories, we read them and go, man, you know, if that happened, you know. And it's, but, you know, my sense is, instead of this Michelangelo painting thing, I'd rather point to another work of art and take a look at this work of art. Anyone recognize this? Yeah, if you see the next slide here, where's Waldo, right? And in that big mass of humanity on that other picture, you have to find this guy and a bunch of other stuff. And created by a guy named Martin Hanford. He loved drawing crowds, and Waldo was an afterthought in one of his drawings. And kids kind of got fascinated by trying to find this character. And then millions of dollars later, right? Look at this next slide. You know, I spent a lot of time trying to find Waldo and whatever we have to find. And my kids were good at it, and my grandkids were good at it. Me, not so much. And kind of like Jacob, I would say, surely Waldo was in this place, but I knew it not. I just couldn't find, you know, it was just so hard to find sometimes. And when I did find him, without help, because the grandkids would always get impatient with me, you know, we'd be looking, there he is. You know, what's wrong with this guy? Okay, I'll do the next page. You know, and they'd give me a time, you know, after a few minutes, they had enough of that. There he is, you know. But when I did find them, sometimes I'd take the book on my own. It's a great bathroom book, by the way. you know, it just was this sense of, I found them. All by myself, I found them. And, you know, this great sense of relief and a sense of joy. And here's the point. If it were easy, no one would bother. Right? No one would bother. The difficulty of it increases the power of discernment. And there's pages and pages of this, and books, in all kinds of settings. And always, where's Waldo? And you're trying to find him. And he's not absent. And there's joy in the search. And there's joy in the growing awareness and discernment. And we need to approach each day like another page. Learning to see the God who is always there, whether we know it or not. And we just need to learn to keep looking and to discern where God is in our lives. Because there are days when it's really easy to see God. Right? It seems obvious. An example for me is the story of Noah. Noah, right? The world was wicked. The flood happens. Out in the waters for a long period of time. Eventually the ark rests, they get off the ark, and then God gives it's kind of like a reboot of creation, and then God gives this promise, I'm not going to do this flood thing again, and I make this promise, you know, I'm your God, you're my people, and he goes down that path of making this promise that he's not going to do this again. And for me, I picture, you know, finding God for Noah on a rainbow day. Oh, yeah, right. God's with me. He makes promises. I need to trust him. And those rainbow days are, I'm going to refer to those as rainbow days. Those are the days it's easy to see God. But skip ahead to a guy named Abraham, a man called by God to become a nation, set apart to display God's love and care for the whole world. Here, in this story, God also gives a symbol of promise. This time it's circumcision. And I can picture Abraham saying, now wait a minute. Noah gets a rainbow. And I get this. You know, couldn't we just have a secret handshake or something like that? So, right, but so, you know, some things it's easy to see God in, some things not so much. And so this rainbow idea, just keep this image in your mind. The rainbow thing, there are those days it's just easy to see God. In Celtic history, they called them thin places. This is sort of an idea where the veil, the distance between God and us seems thin. It seems easy to see God. And I like that phrase, thin places. Maybe you've been in a thin place at the birth of a child. You saw it happen and you sense God's presence in a profound way. Maybe it with a mountaintop, literally or figuratively, but you're in a moment of mountaintop and it's easy to see God. Or in a profound moment of worship, right? I think eventually we'll hear from the Mexico team down the road, but you know, I think the Mexico trip, when I heard them all come back and they're all pumped, right? The whole trip became a bit of a rainbow experience in a sense. You know, God seemed so evident and so close in so many ways. And I get that. It's a time where you sense God's presence. When life seems good and God is clear. Let me say to you people who are in the rainbow days right now, enjoy them. They're wonderful moments. I love those days too, where we celebrate God's goodness and presence and in our families and in our relationships and in creation and in our work and in our experiences. Treasure those times. But let's remember we live in a world that is broken. And we suffer the effects of sin and brokenness. We know that. And then there's the struggles that we have with our own personal sin. And sometimes God in those hard times can seem distant. The opposite can happen too. You can feel God's presence deeply even in suffering. But sometimes God seems far, far away. And we say with the psalmist, where are you? Where are you? And you got those two sides, the rainbow days and then those times when maybe God feels distant. But here's another time. A time when life is routine. There's no major crisis. There's no big problems. The operative word of your life is fine. It's all fine. We may feel like we're relationally in neutral. Maybe we feel like, I'm in a bit of a spiritual rut. Nothing catastrophic or anything, but in a bit of a rut. I'm a little bit unmotivated. I'm more likely to wake up worrying than praying. I don't get up and say, oh man, what's God up to in my life? I get up thinking, okay, what do I got to do today? All the things I need to do. And here's the point. Waldo is still on the pages on those days. He's still on the pages if we remember to look, but most of our attention is elsewhere. Let me ask you, how many of you, that's sort of more feels about where you're at? Because most of life is kind of in those places. There's a fascinating verse in 1 Samuel in the Old Testament. This is during the time called the Judges. And really, the story of the Judges, you'll see this is this up and down thing. You know, obedience, disobedience. Obedience, disobedience. It's just up and down it goes, and the Judges come, and they try to guide the people back to God in the main. And and Mount Sinai and the law has happened. You know, Israel's free from slavery. All that's happened. Moses is long gone. Joshua's gone. And they have the promised land. Right? They're there. Life ought to be pretty good. And then we have this little verse here in 1 Samuel 3. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. Why? I mean, God's still there. It says rare. It didn't say non-existent. The tabernacle is still open. People still going. There's worship happening. Sacrifices are happening. God's present, as he always is. But the people's focus is elsewhere. A psychological term we could use for this is called habituation. Habituation. Whatever is new gets lots of attention, but awareness fades over time. That new home, so exciting at first, now needs repairs. You make a big list of repairs. You don't do a whole lot of it. Eventually, even the needed repairs don't get done. In fact, they don't even faze us. We get used to what is. Some of you may own a house that has a couch that is absolutely horrible, and you don't even know it anymore. This can happen. The problem with, it's one thing if it's about a couch or something like that, or some horrible lamp or whatever, but this is can happen in our work, this can happen in our family life, this can happen in our marriages, and this can happen in our spiritual lives as well. Habituation. We get so used to it. We have a small group that my wife and I are part of. And last Monday when we met, we were talking about Easter. And I was sharing a little bit the dilemma of a pastor about Christmas and Easter. The two most profound events in human history. The incarnation and the resurrection. And I was saying, you know, how hard it is from a pastoral point of view to say, oh, man, I got to preach on the incarnation again. Right? And you know, and because your struggle is this. It's old hat. I'm not telling you a new story. It's just as profound as if you heard it for the first time. But we don't often feel that way. Christ walks out of the tomb. Woohoo! You know, it should be. But we're going, yeah, that's Easter. Next holiday, let's move on. And you see, that habituation thing has kicked in. It's an old story again. We're going to have communion, right? Oh, the body of Christ, the blood of Christ. We're so used to it, it should blow us away. That's habituation. Jesus didn't say, I have come to bring you a mediocre life. Ho hum, ho hum. Jesus said, I have come to bring you life in all its fullness. How do we get past that? And the point of my message is that we need to learn more and more to live with awareness. You know, the spiritual habituation that we're all prone to is really more dangerous in some ways than real depravity. In real depravity, you know it. You know it. You're stuck with that addiction. You know it. Spiritual habituation, spiritual unawareness, that stuff just creeps in. You want to know how seriously God thinks on this? Look at Revelation 3 with me. These are letters to churches. So hear this as if you're the church receiving the letter. And this is what God is saying to this particular church. He says this in this revelation. So because you are lukewarm, spiritually habituated, because you are lukewarm, neither hot, neither cold, I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. Tell us what you really think, God. Right? We can get so content with mediocre. And God's saying, mediocre disgusts me. You know, I might ask, you know, that this gradual process, it's subtle and it involves a failure to really see. And then I see what Jesus said when he meant in Matthew 13, where we read this, where Jesus says, for the hearts of this people have grown dull. You know, not rebellious, dull. You ever had anybody say, boy, you got a boring heart? Right? Their ears are hard of hearing. Their eyes have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so I should heal them. What's the connection? Open eyes, really open. Open ears, really open. Open hearts, really open. And healing happens. Without it, healing doesn't happen. And then he says, blessed are your eyes for they see and your ears for they hear. And I pray that my eyes and my ears are wide open and my heart is wide open. You know, we might ask, why doesn't God send more rainbow days to help me along here? Maybe send way more dreams like he did with Jacob. Part of me says, maybe he is. You're not seeing him. But there may be another reason for that too. Maybe it's God's way of helping us to learn to see in the day-to-day life we live. I'm going to read you something about a guy named Brother Lawrence. It's a bit of a contemporized version of it, so if it sounds contemporary, it's not. God with the Kitchen Guy is what it's called. There are real people who claim it happened before. It happened to a man named Nicholas Herman in the food service industry. He had stints in the military and in transportation, and now he was a short order cook and a bottle washer. But he became deeply dissatisfied with his life. He worried chronically about himself, even whether or not he was saved. One day, Nick was looking at a tree. And the same truth struck him that struck the psalmist so long ago. The secret of the life of a tree is that it remained rooted in something other and deeper than itself. He decided to make his life an experiment in what he called habitual, silent, secret conversation of the soul with God. He is known today by the new name given to him by his friends, Brother Lawrence. He remained obscure throughout his life. He never got voted pope, never got close to becoming the CEO of his organization. He stayed in the kitchen. But the people around him found that rivers of living water flowed out of him that made them want to know God the way he did. And I quote, "The good brother found God everywhere. As much as while he was repairing shoes, as while he was praying with the community." After Lawrence died, his friends put together a book of his letters and conversations, and it's called Practicing the Presence of God. Practicing the Presence of God. And it's thought, apart from the Bible, to be the most widely read book of the last four centuries. This monastic short order cook has probably outsold novelists John Grisham, Tom Clancy, and J.K. Rowling put together. Look at this slide. If you can go to the next slide, yeah, there we go. Frederick Buchner said it this way. There is no event so commonplace but that God is present within it. Always hidden, always leaving you room to recognize him, or not. Because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments, and life itself is grace. All moments are key moments. It's all about grace. And if God is everywhere, and he is, and if God works in all things, and he does, then we need to learn from more than just rainbows and dreams. We need to enjoy those. We need to be grateful for those. But we need to learn to see the God who is with us in the kitchen and the workplace and in the brokenness as well. The God who is in the war zones and prisons. The God who is with us in cutting the grass and raising kids. The God who is with us in all things all the time, whether we see it or not. And I'm trying to say, let's learn to see it. You ever see a parent who yells at their kids quite a lot to get their attention? No elbows at this time. You know, you have those, you know, and they're always having to yell to get their kids' attention. And it gets to the point where the volume needs to escalate and escalate, even to get the littlest moment of attention. And here's the problem. If these kids always need the yelling to happen, they will learn to tune out a parent. That's habituation as well. And I thought, maybe God our Father lowers his voice so we'll learn to pay attention. Puritan preacher Walter Craddock in the 1600s, and I'm going back a ways there, talked of encountering God in the so-called holy and the so-called ordinary as if they were two different things. And he wished his church members could say, and I thought, man, this is a prayer I could pray for us as well. He said this, God hath appeared 200 times, 2,000 times to my soul. I have seen him, one, while in the sacraments, and I hope in a moment when we have Lord's Supper together, you'll see God's, feel God's presence as you partake. So I've seen him in the sacraments, I have seen him among the saints, here's the saints. I have seen him in such a country, in such a condition, in such a place, in such a meadow, in such a wood, when I read his word and call upon his name. And in the 2,000 times I have seen him, he has appeared to me too. And that's daily. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have conversations where we start off each day with, so how have you seen God today? And we actually had answers. You know, I read of one person who talked about sleep as a mini resurrection. First I thought, what a weirdo. And then I thought about it. I thought, could you imagine getting up each morning as a mini resurrection? Because it kind of is. It's kind of a small death. And could you imagine if you woke up with that in mind? I'm alive again. And you started that way. And it wasn't about, oh man, what have I got to do? I'm alive again. If we could think that way, it would change the way you thought about your day. We need to learn to see God on the pages of our daily lives, like finding Waldo on the pages. Try this. Try this week. Each day, review your day. Do it with somebody if you can. And ask yourself where you saw God at work. Just ask, okay, where was God at work today? And think on that. And then also ask yourself this. Where did you live with a sense of awareness, and where did you live with a sense of unawareness? And confess that. Just keep it that simple right now. One of my favorite verses in the Bible. Hebrews 12. Look at it with me. Hebrews 12. The writer says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders. And all that stuff that makes you unaware is a hindrance. That hinders. And the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And then this. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer, the author, the perfecter of our faith. Now notice two things about this passage. We have the witness of the past. By the way, that's scripture. And we have the present. That's the church. To help us see and run well. Because we don't run well alone. And then here's an action. We fix our eyes on Jesus. This is an intentional, deliberate thing. It's about attention. It's about focus. God wants to be known. He's leaning into it. We need to get past this. Maybe some of us need to start with this and maybe get this happening. But we need to get on it. Because you never know, and here's the point, you'll never know where he'll turn up or to whom, through whom he'll speak to you. I don't know if you've had moments where, as a teacher, I've had students speak to me, God speak through students on many occasions, although they didn't know it. I've had people who have spoken to me, and they had no notion that they spoke to me, but they did. It's interesting, we don't know how God's going to show up. I was thinking about the Easter story, and I thought of Mary at the tomb, and she thinks Jesus is the landscaping guy at first. Where have they taken him? You're talking to Jesus. There he is. The landscaping guy, right? Where's Waldo? Where's God? Maybe he is showing up in the landscaping guy. He's right there. He's right there. He's right there. He's right here. If I have eyes but that they only see and ears that only hear. Fix your eyes, Sid. Fix your eyes on him. Get your eyes away from this. Get your eyes away from this. Fix your eyes on Jesus. He's right there on the page of your life. Just keep looking. He's closer than you think. And he longs to love you and walk with you.